So just before arriving here, in fact, we were doing an East Coast program in Atlanta, Georgia, and it just ended, and that's when I got on the plane and landed here on Wednesday morning. But we take 20 in a program, and 19 of them came in with major depression. And where was the 20th? The 20th had isolated anxiety. And so they have to have anxiety or depression to come into the program, or a mental illness that's connected, like OCD or something like that. And you can see out of this, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 that had severe levels of depression. Many of these people were on medications, some of them 4 medications. We didn't have as many come in on benzos this time. I think there were 2 patients that were on benzos and 2 that had recently gotten off, recently by meaning within a week of coming to the program. We try to get them off if at all possible, because our studies show our long-term success will be better when they're benzo-free. Benzos are a frontal lobe suppressant. By the way, do you have a lot of people on chronic benzos in this country?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, quite a few. Okay. So this is where they were at the beginning of the program. And as you'll see, many of these were suicidal. Only one had mild major depression. And it was actually 10 days later, this is where they were. And these, by the way, the drug companies don't like to do the PQ9 studies because it doesn't show statistical significance. They do the HAM-D. The HAM-D is where others are evaluating them. And I'm sure some of you have put people on antidepressants and you bring them in and they say, I feel no better. And the family says, but they are better. And this is ways that they're better. We've noticed them different. And so this is why the pharmaceutical companies love to do the HAM-D analysis, because if they do the patient analysis, they won't show much significance at all. But the PQ9 is patient-driven. We want them not only to get better, but we want them to know that they're getting better and have objective ways in which they're feeling better. And so these are the 9 criteria. These are evaluated based on the 9 criteria. Each of those 9 criteria have a total of 3 potential points. The more points, the worse it is. And these are the DSM criteria. So you can see the average individual, and you might say, well, you know, case 6, not as good. Maybe case 14, not as good. But remember, these are individuals that were also on drugs and benzos, and some of them had been depressed for 25 years. It's going to take a different time frame for some of these to improve. But notice case 8. You know, severe at the top of the list, not even qualifying. Case 1, many of those cases, case 16, 19, severe down to none. So you take the average, and they had at the high end of moderate in this program, down to none. Now, where is our values at mostly? Well, in the Weimar program, for whatever reason, we always have more severe cases in that program, in part because the more severe cases think that the Atlanta program is new, and they're a little nervous. They're thinking that this one might not be as good as the experienced Weimar program. So people self-select off in the Weimar program that are more severe. And we may not get it down to 4.4 in the Weimar program. Sometimes we do, down to 3, but the average is going to be more like 5 to 6, because they're starting higher. They're starting up 21, 22 as well. Now, Beck looks at depression in the way that you're thinking. Beck was the, in fact, we have just, all of our therapists have to go through the Beck certification training. We like the Beck model as far as the cognitive behavioral therapy. So they're learning how to do CBT for anxiety, for depression, for suicide, and those sorts of things. And Beck looks at it in 21 different ways on how you're thinking, as well as some physical symptoms. And Beck has a category called not only severe but extreme, and you can see 3 of those cases were extreme depression. And so they were extremists in the way they were thinking. And 19, one was not depressed in the way they were thinking, and some were just mild to moderate. But again, on the way they're thinking, you can see the significant improvement that occurred. The extremists, all three of them went from extreme depression to not even qualifying as far as having depression in the way they're thinking now. So the good news is they're not only getting better physically, but they're getting far better in the way they're thinking. So the average person came even more depressed in regards to thinking, and they're down to no depression in 10 days. Now, of course, the temptation for them at the end of this program is to think they've got it licked. But we have something called reentry. In the last 3 days, we're training them for reentry, and then some of them we encourage the extended support plan, where we're actually helping them through in a professional manner. By the way, the drug companies don't like to look at this functionality. They are looking at it, but they don't publish on it except if it shows benefit. And there was one drug recently, a relatively new drug, that showed that 6% of people actually improve in function. And they advertise it everywhere. This is the drug that improves in function. None of the others do. Well, let's see. What percent of people did it actually help? 6% in function. This is, and of course, there's four that came in extremely difficult functioning. In other words, they weren't able to work, they weren't able to function in the family, they weren't able to function in society at all. Most of them had very difficulty in functioning. They were functioning some not so much, and two were actually high levels of functioning. You can have severe depression and anxiety with people still working every day and still functioning at the family level, but still thinking of ending their life. And you can see the difference here, far better than 6%, far better than 50%, far better than 75% of individuals improving in function. So the average went from very difficulty functioning to not difficulty in functioning. 10 were thinking of suicide on a regular basis. Some were thinking about it less than a quarter of time. Those were the three lowest scale, what we call somewhat difficult. If you're very difficult, that means you're thinking about it around half the time. And there's three that were thinking about it continually. They couldn't get it off their mind, thinking of ending their life. And this is where they were when they left. Not even 8 out of those 10. And of course, we know how it happens in the psychiatric community. In the psychiatric world, we're primarily training them in these psych centers' safety plans so that they, instead of ending their life, they do something else, which is good. It protects them from ending their life. And we teach them safety plans as well. We're not against the safety plans, but we're far more interested in correcting the thoughts. Because if you don't have the thoughts, you don't even have to worry about safety plans. And you can see 8 out of 10 of them were no longer having the thoughts. And the two that were, they were just less than a quarter of the time. So the average individual, suicidality, very difficult, down to 0.2. Now, if they're still thinking about it, we would recommend the extended support plan. This is why they need to continue to go along on this. So anxiety, which is more difficult to treat, anxiety or depression? Anxiety is known to be more difficult, requires double, triple the dose of medicines, a lot more side effects. That's often when the benzos are used. You can see 17 came in with levels of anxiety, many of them in the severe category. And we see across the board improvement in anxiety as well in as little as 10 days. The DSM scores went from moderate down to none. The Beck Anxiety Inventory, Beck looks at it a different way. You can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 had severe levels of anxiety. And notice the marked difference in 9 days from severe anxiety down to just mild to none. All 20 came in with levels of emotional intelligence. This group was a little more emotionally intelligent than average. Most of our groups come in around 92, about 8 points below the mean. The mean is 100. We had one person that was considered emotionally retarded, case number 16. When they came in, but most had a more emotional intelligence than typical. Some pretty high, but notice what happened afterwards. And this is the measurement that is most connected with their future success. So our goal isn't just to eradicate depression and anxiety, it's to set them up for significant success. And notice that case that was emotionally retarded They're up there over 120. That puts them in the top 15 percentile of the nation in emotional intelligence. And so the average went from 120 to 129. That's a 3-standard-deviation move in the program. And so what is it that produces some of this benefit? I think the question that was being asked for this talk is, what helps you with your faith and helps get rid of doubt? Yeah, so we follow them up at, this was just our 10-day results. We do all the results again at 2 weeks after they go home. And typically, 2 weeks after they go home, do you think it's better or worse? It's actually a little better. On average, they'll be better in their home environment. That means that we've trained them for reentry pretty well. And then we measure everybody at the 20-week point. If they're in the extended support plan, we're measuring them every week during that 20 weeks. And then we started just this last year measuring them at 1 year point. And so we don't have 1 year accumulated data from all of this. We always did 20 weeks. But now we're doing the 1 year data points. And it's gratifying to see the consistent success. A lot of lifestyle centers have complained that when they look at long-term data, it doesn't turn out very well. In this program, it's not that way. Our long-term data is quite good. Now, some will relapse, but when they relapse, they will tell us that they didn't get as severe, and they also caught themselves before they got that severe, and they realized, what am I not doing? And they got out their discharge plan. And then they realize, wait a minute, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, and then it comes about. So this is a letter I just got today from a Georgia participant, and she allowed us to share it. I apologize for not filling out all the thank you cards. I did a couple, but just got overwhelmed by the amount of gratitude and lack of space. Just writing thank you was too inferior for all of you. It is Thanksgiving Day, so she wrote this on Thanksgiving. And it seems appropriate to show my gratitude. Thought I would do it justice what's in my heart. You see, I was actively suicidal when I had my phone interview and even battled carrying it out between the interview and arriving in Georgia. I told God, you have to get me into this program or I'm done. I had a plan, method, and opportunity to carry it out. I tried so many prescription drugs, alcohol, and other various forms of self-medicating, all without lasting results. Various forms of therapy only left me wondering why I was trying so hard, only to have the big and mighty God pointing fingers at and judging me and my constant failings. I lied to get accepted. Do you think she's the first person who lied to get accepted? Well, why did, or do you know what her lie was? Yeah, we don't take actively suicidal people because we don't have the 24/7 supervision, and she knew that. So she lied. She said she was having suicidal thoughts. She knew she could get in with that. But if you have a plan and the means, we're to commit these people. You know, that's what we're to do. And then they can come to the program after they're not actively suicidal. But she said, I was actively suicidal, because I knew it was my final resort, my last hope. I've been told I have treatment-resistant depression and anxiety. Various medications all came with terrible side effects and without results. It was even suggested to me to try electroshock therapy. And I was so afraid of being denied acceptance into the program and so full of pain that I quickly answered no when Sarah asked me if I had recently been suicidal. I wanted to want to live. I just didn't know how anymore. I felt I was a burden to my family. I had lost all motivation. The house was a wreck. The dishes piled. I wasn't showering or brushing my teeth. I was lost in a sea of what appeared to be unending despair. She had a spouse. She had small kids. I can tell you she's 35. I arrived in Georgia so overwhelmed and anxious that my blood pressure was 40 points higher than normal. Called my husband and I told him I was coming home. He talked me into giving it a couple of more days. You can see how these people want to come home at first. Why do they want to come home? In part, they're being accountable and they don't feel like doing any of this. And they also don't think it's going to get them better. They think these measures are kind of too simple. You know, what, exercise? Come on, it's not going to help me. This light. First participant I met was a pastor, and that gave me courage. If a pastor could step down off the pedestal when always place them when they always are placed on it and admit he needed help, so could I. My drivers were kind, but I was completely withdrawn, didn't want to converse. Ellen Marie was boisterous and perky. Linda had a constant smile. She's the administrator of the program. And Daniel walked way too much and laughed all the time. I thought, there is no way these people can be real. They're disgustingly happy. It's not possible. Then Alma Marie started talking about hydro, and I was of the quick opinion she was crazy. She wants to do that? She was one of the staff who'd been through the program and loved hydro. The second day, Dr. H, he's the physician we've trained for the Georgia program, put me on a two-meal-a-day plan and a 24-hour fast that turned into 42 because I already hadn't eaten in several hours when I saw him, but he was encouraging and of the opinion that I could be helped. I wasn't so sure, though. She was obese, I'll just tell you that. I met with Selene, this is the counselor, and told her my fears and my story of how and why I was there. She was encouraging, kind, and gentle in her approach. Thank you, Selene, for all that you have done. I look forward to working with you these next few weeks. Then Pastor Paul kept getting up and talking about weaving Jesus' story into mine, that he knew my sorrows, sadness, emotions. He made my heart spin with thoughts of, but how? Why? Are you sure? Even me? And more? Then Linda saw me crying after one of his lectures and asked if I was okay. It was the first time I saw her without a smile. But it was replaced with genuine concern. I told her, I get that Jesus suffered the same emotions. I get that he was tempted in ways I've been and will be. But I don't understand the surrendering. How does releasing it make it better? She straightaway set up a time to meet with the pastor. I was intimidated by him at first. I don't do well with strange men. She had a background that you might guess why she didn't do well with strange men, but also because I was sure that this man of God was going to judge me, shame me, and ridicule me for things I was dealing with and doing. I had far too many secrets for him to think I was worth the time to care, much less help me. I was wrong. This man was so comforting. In a voice so soothing, I'm sure a random stranger could drop a screaming infant in his arms and they'd instantly fall asleep. Pastor Paul had this genuine fatherly demeanor that hardly comes off as any of the things I was sure he would. But I still don't think I was worth his time and efforts, but he never turned me away. In fact, he offered to visit with me daily. He took time from what I am positive was a busy schedule to help me. After meeting with him that first night, I think I had a dream spiritual warfare. She goes into how she had a demonic experience, and this is common in our program. She was awakened by a dream. I was being chased by a black cloud and then covered by it, and can only describe it as a demon jumped in my face and yelled, "This is not over yet." I awoke in a cold sweat and could not get out of bed until morning because I was so scared. Pastor Paul offered to come with Linda if it happened again to pray over me and with me. He didn't judge me or ask questions or blame me. He just prayed with me and offered me a simple prayer to carry with me in case I had something like it come up again. A couple days later, I had a full-blown anxiety attack in his office that I'm still embarrassed about. I just knew he was thinking I must be crazy and beyond help. In case you haven't figured it out, fortune-telling is my standard of modus operandi of distorted thinking. I apologized for my panic thinking that was expected of me, and I should, but also because I kind of wanted to save face. I was humiliated over that appointment, but he assured me that it wasn't necessary and that he was excited to see how God had pulled me out of it. I didn't even cry into my hands, even though I could now breathe. It's exciting, but I do see how God rescued me from it. As time went on, I learned that pretty much every person had their story with depression, that almost every single one had utilized the program. Linda shared her story. Daniel shared his. Elma, Elena, Cammie, Michelle, Lisa Marie. I didn't think it was possible to come back from depression and live life so fully and happily as these people were. I've been back home less than a week, but I am more hopeful than I've ever been in the last 35 years. I crave sunlight. I'm walking daily. I'm sleeping 8 hours a night, which never happened in the history of me ever. Seriously, I've struggled with insomnia since I was a child. I remember wandering the house at 4 years old in the middle of the night. I must admit, I was beginning to think that blue light was a joke. But I'm still using it, and I'm still eating vegan despite my husband's cheese and eggs in the fridge. I'm even doing hydro in my shower daily. Be sure to tell the shoulder sheriff that. That's Michelle. Why she was called the shoulder sheriff, that was to get in the cold all the way down to the shoulders. If you had told me a month ago I'd be willing, waking up early and going to bed early and sleeping like a normal person, I'd have laughed in your face. Real sleep without exhaustion was something I didn't think was possible for me. I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome several years ago because no matter what I did, I was exhausted. Now, no coffee, no Dr. Pepper, no black tea. I'm functioning. I'm thriving. That alone would be well worth the price. I'm looking forward to the remainder of the program. And then she goes on the other habits, that she's not doing screen time, that she's relieved to have so much of the guilt and shame out of her life. And to have people say, you're worth it, I'm proud of you, you're special, was not things that she was used to hearing. And how the struggle is getting so much better. After completing the 20 weeks, making this a way of life, I will finish it, and I want to become certified to be a trainer in a community program. And she also wants to go through the spiritual training. Which brings me to Dr. Nedley. I showed up halfway through this program and gave some lectures and helped the physician through the final discharge planning. He's still somewhat in the learning stage. Dr. Nedley, thank you so much for what you've done with this program, for going outside the doctor box and against Big Pharma and the medical norm to help others like me find healing. Your crown is going to be full of jewels in heaven, and the first time I met you was when I was up front giving my testimony, and you hugged me and told me you were proud of me and that I was strong. I am not sure that you will ever comprehend just how and what that did for me. And she admits she still has healing to do. But in summarizing, it's case after case like this that makes it easy for me to have faith and no doubt. The spirit of prophecy says natural means used in accordance with God's will bring about what? Supernatural results. And we see this time and again, case after case. So I must admit, there may be something that comes my way that I'm not anticipating, but there is no doubt. There is no doubt that God's methods work and that He is still interested in the personal lives of human beings like her. And if this girl can be transformed who thought that there was no way that she could get out of it, there's hope for anyone in the world. And so I hope that you're encouraged during this Amen weekend to utilize God's methods of healing, show His love and compassion for each one. I don't even necessarily remember doing what I did with her. I remember I came right as they were giving their testimonies on Wednesday night, and I remember she was struggling with her. She was sitting next to me. So when she came back, I did talk to her a little bit and put my arm around her. But that was just what we would do for anybody. But yet, what a difference it makes when the Lord is using you to say just a few words to others with His looks of compassion for humanity. Well, it's been nice getting acquainted with you. I would encourage, you know, one of the things I mentioned to some others, we're wanting to start an Australia program. But it is going to require some Australians coming over and getting trained in the U.S., and we'd love to have that happen. If you could get licensed in the U.S., it would be a paid program. So in other words, you could get paid while you're getting training. If not, we will support it. So we will pay for your training. But we'd like to have the right candidate, particularly the physician is probably the most important because they're heading up the entire aspect of the program. And we would love to train a physician who's willing to dedicate their life to programs like this. But it would be sustainable, and it would be one that would be an exciting life. I can tell you, you know, I mentioned gyrocopters earlier, and yeah, they're enjoyable, But the most enjoyable thing that I do is to help patients like Angie. And there's nothing that beats that. And that's why we'd like to expand this work and see it go to other places around the globe.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.